Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. Drones, unmanned aircraft as instruments of state murder. Where did they come from? How was this policy developed? And should it continue?
It was really after 9/11 that it became a huge growth industry.
And how many drones are now in the U.S. arsenal?
It went from virtually non-existent about 10 years ago to over 7,500 drones now that are in the hands of the military and the CIA.
Are drones a necessary step forward? Is this humanitarian war? Do drones save more lives than they take?
It doesn't save U.S. lives because it really guarantees us to be in a perpetual state of war, because every time we kill somebody with one of those missiles, we are usually killing some innocent people, and we're usually making the local people very, very angry. Some of those people will end up picking up guns and fighting with anti-American forces, which just completes the cycle of violence, and we go round and round and round again.
I am thrilled to have as a guest on Talk Nation Radio, Medea Benjamin. She is co-founder of Global Exchange and one of my favorite anti-war, pro-peace organizations, Code Pink. She is one of our best activists and a terrific author. She is organizing the first ever drone summit. We'll talk about how you can take part in that. And her new book is called Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control. Medea Benjamin, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Nice to be on the air with you, David.
It is wonderful to have you. Tell us where in the world drones came from. I think 10, 20 years ago, nobody had heard of these things. Now they seem to be a major part of our public policy. How did this develop?
Well, that's right. There have been some form of drone or another that have been used quite a long time, going back to the Second World War. They were also used in the case of Vietnam, but not to kill. They were used as spy drones and developed during the Balkans as well. It was really after 9/11 that it became a huge growth industry, because there was a perceived need by the military and then by the CIA to have better ways of both doing surveillance as well as getting into the business of strapping on Hellfire missiles onto these unmanned aircraft and using them to kill people, bomb people, without putting U.S. lives at risk. And in the last 10 years, there's been this amazing boom in the drone industry, where it went from virtually non-existent about 10 years ago to over 7,500 drones now that are in the hands of the military and the CIA. Most of those are small drones, but there are large ones like the ones that are used to fire the Hellfire missiles, and then there's really big ones like the Global Hawk that are used for surveillance.
Is this in terms of minimizing human suffering, reducing the number of human beings killed by our military, is this a good trend? Is this a positive trend, or is it a bad thing? And does it really avoid costing U.S. lives, or is there blowback?
Well, that's why I decided to write the book, David, because I was very concerned that this was being perceived as something that was saving U.S. soldiers and also a quote, humane way of fighting war, because we had these really precise bombs that would just get the bad guys and no one else. Those are wrong on both accounts. It doesn't save U.S. lives because it really guarantees us to be in a perpetual state of war, because every time we kill somebody with one of those missiles, we are usually killing some innocent people, and we're usually making the local people very, very angry. Some of those people will end up picking up guns and fighting with anti-American forces, which just completes the cycle of violence, and we go round and round and round again. The other part of it about being so precise that it saves the lives of innocents, yes, if on the one hand you're going to look at something like carpet bombing during World War II, there is not the killing of citizens on that kind of scale. But, you know, we're supposed to evolve as a civilization, and what we want to evolve into is, as you well know, people who don't kill each other at all, and certainly not people who think that it's acceptable to have a certain percentage of innocent people killed while you're killing other armed and perceived enemies. And while the U.S. says that in the case of, for example, Pakistan, doesn't even acknowledge that this program exists because it's done by the secretive CIA, those who try to track what's happening say that over 3,000 people have been killed, and some, especially those who are on the ground, say that many of them, perhaps 800 of them, are totally innocent civilians, and perhaps the rest, the vast majority of them, are not militants, in any case, not militants that are trying to attack the United States, which is the only legal justification the U.S. could have for killing them.
Yeah, I was wondering about legal justifications and whether that even is one, because there seems to be a blurring of lines on the question of whether this is a new form of warfare, in which case it ought to be legalized as war, despite somehow the Kellogg-Briand Pact, the UN Charter, the U.S. Constitution, the need for the American public perhaps to be told that there's a war and have it declared and so forth, and some other mechanism of public policy, such as law enforcement, but these individuals, even the targeted, intended strike victims, are not being charged with crimes, trials aren't being held in absentia, they're not being convicted of any crime, they're just being killed. So what is the legal status of the use of drones?
Well, it's quite remarkable that it's been under the Obama administration that the use of drones has really vastly increased, and that an administration run by a constitutional lawyer would say that we have the right under domestic law, because days after 9/11, Congress said that the government was authorized to use force to get back at those who attacked us. And that is still being used today as the justification domestically. And internationally, we have the right to self-defense. It means the right of self-defense if you are imminently in danger of attack. If somebody is about to kill you with a gun, you have a right to defend yourself. But they have stretched the meaning of that so far that it is ridiculous. And in fact, if you just think of what would happen if the tables were turned. What if the Chinese decided that the Uyghurs that were living in the United States were enemy combatants and they could just come into the U.S. and kill them in Long Island where they were living? Or what if the Russians said that Chechens living anywhere in the world could be attacked and they could send in a drone to attack them in London or France or Germany or wherever? Or what if the Cubans decided that people like Posada Carriles, a known terrorist living in Miami, it was well past time after 37 years to bring justice to him and decided to send in a drone into Miami? I mean, we would never allow for that kind of thing to happen. We would never say that was legal to do. And yet we are doing it on a regular basis. In places like Pakistan, in Yemen, and Somalia. And to be honest, David, we don't really know where else because these programs aren't open to the public.
I guess we know Iran in that they've got one of the drones and won't give it back. We're speaking with...
Well, you know, that's right because these things do crash a lot. And that's another thing they really don't tell us about because one of the other selling points for drones is how cheap they are, you know, compared to manned aircraft, they go for $5 million, $10 million a pop, but these things pop all the time. They just, a couple of them just came down in the Seychelles. They're They're falling down when they're being tested here in the United States all the time. They've crashed in Afghanistan. They crashed in Iraq. These things are quite poorly made. And the fact that one of them came down in Iran, the Iranians say that they scrambled the computer system on it and were able to bring it down. The U.S. denies that. But in any case, yes, these things are proliferating, whether or not by being sold by the U.S. or number two drone maker Israel or the Chinese, or because they're just falling down, and wherever they fall, that country or that non-state entity can then copy the drone.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson speaking with Medea Benjamin, whose new book is called Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, which suggests that one of the reasons that military systems tend to fail and crash, drones or otherwise, is that the companies that get the contracts are not necessarily the companies that build the best products, but the companies that buy the most Congress members. I wonder about this question of another country using a drone in the United States to target someone. I mean, is it just a thought experiment, or are we approaching the day in which a variety of countries target each other with drones? Who has drones and who's working on getting them?
Well, the U.S., this is one area, really, in manufacturing where the U.S. still has a leg up, but it is being brought up by Israel from behind, and Israel actually doesn't even have the same kind of restrictions that U.S. companies have on selling overseas. The U.S. can sell to NATO members and to Israel, but has restrictions on selling to other companies, something that the Congressional Drone Caucus is trying to lift. But Israel is selling a lot of its drones to a lot of undemocratic regimes. And then China. China is becoming a very prolific producer of all kinds of drones. And we know the Chinese don't have many qualms when it comes to selling their drones overseas to anybody who will buy them. So the drones now are in the hands of over 50 nations and non-state entities as well. And so if we think that there's already a proliferation of drones, we ain't seen nothing yet. This is really just the beginning.
I wonder about this sort of rapid shift in thinking about such tools that we've seen in recent years. You look at individuals like Harold Coe, an attorney who thought that all of George W. Bush's war abuses were outrageous and criminal, and who now is almost the main public face of the Obama administration in terms of justifying all these warlike actions as not really being wars and being legal and so forth. How is it as a nation that we've come to accept drone warfare without any public debate or discussion or decision as to exactly how, if at all, it was going to be legalized and used, and there was going to be accountability for how it was done?
Well, the reason why is because the public really doesn't know about it. You talked about Harold Coe. Well, it was many years after the U.S. was using drones to kill people that anybody in the administration even talked about it. And Harold Coe, it wasn't until March of 2010 that he was talking to an association of lawyers, and he attempted to counter the increasing criticism about using drones for extrajudicial killings. And the Attorney General, Eric Holder, didn't talk about it until March of this year was the first time that he attempted to make a justification for this. Barack Obama only mentioned it once because he was forced to with a direct question. So the public isn't getting information about it, and makes it very difficult for them to understand how dangerous the proliferation of drones is. That's why I wrote the book, That's why we're organizing a drone summit at the end of April, and that's why it's so important for people to get a better handle on what it means, really, to have a foreign policy that is becoming more and more based on machines that are being, quote, piloted from thousands and thousands of miles away in a desert in Nevada, dropping bombs on people in other countries that we are either at war with or not at war with, and somehow, in some fantastical imagination, thinking that this is going to make us safer as a society or safer as a globe.
I want to ask you, Medea Benjamin, about this upcoming drone summit and how else people can get involved in raising this issue and perhaps motivating Congress or some other institution to stand up and address it. But I just want to ask quickly first about this question of targeting U.S. citizens with drones, because it seems that perhaps the only reason that Eric Holder bothered to give a speech at a law school explaining why it is okay to go and kill people with drones was that U.S. citizens had been killed, in particular one man, and then later in a separate strike, his teenage son. Is it now the policy of the United States that children can be killed with drones and that U.S. children, as well as the rest of the world's children, can be killed with drones?
Well, yes, you were talking about the incident in Yemen. This was in September of 2011 when the U.S. government fired a drone attack on not just one American citizen. The one that we hear about was Anwar al-Awlaki, but he was actually with another American citizen called Samir Khan at the time. They were just taken out by the drone, obviously with no charges against them, no chance to surrender. And then 3 weeks later, al-Awlaki's son, who you were referring to, yes, a teenager born in Denver, was killed by another drone. In the case of the son, the U.S. government has basically said, oh, that was a mistake. We didn't really mean to kill him. But these mistakes, there are no accountability for these mistakes. The family tried to bring a claim in a U.S. court, and the judge found that they were not going to review it because these were national security issues. So, yes, our government has gotten away with not only killing U.S. citizens and continuing to justify the killing of U.S. citizens, but as you say, killing underage citizens, in this case, the 16-year-old American. The Bureau for Investigative Journalism estimates that in Pakistan alone, there have been about 175 children killed in the drone attack. In the case of the military in Iraq and Afghanistan, there are groups that have fought over the years for the U.S. to do body counts. And when they kill innocent people, quote, by mistake, they are supposed to at least compensate monetarily those families. Of course, there is no amount of monetary compensation that can compensate for the death of a loved one. But it's a way of forcing our government to hold the accountable in some way. In the case of the drone attacks in the CIA, there is no body count. There is no apology to families. There is no compensation at all. It's just, if anything, oops.
Well, I was not even aware that they had admitted it was a mistake. I thought there were Freedom of Information Act requests in process to try to get them to say whether it was intentional or collateral and so forth. But I want to get to the topic of this upcoming first ever drone summit. What is it? Where will it be? How can people take part, and what can they expect to learn and get involved in?
Well, we're very excited about the Drone Summit because it's the first time ever that people from various angles related to drones are coming together. We have folks coming in from overseas, like a member of parliament from Pakistan. We're trying to get the visa for the premier lawyer that represents drone victims there. We have people who just got back recently from Yemen and Somalia to give us firsthand accounts there. We have folks from the human rights community, the legal community, the activists, and the scientific community, because they say, as bad as it is now, you ain't seen nothing yet in terms of what's being planned and how these drones are going to become more and more automated until, unless we stop it, there's no need for even a human in the loop. So we're all coming together on April 28th in Washington, D.C., to have a day of looking at not only the issue of drones overseas, but the drones that are being used here at home and what we're likely to see, again, if we don't do anything to stop it, in terms of the opening up of the U.S. skies to thousands and thousands of drones, and how every police department in this country is going to be using drones to as surveillance tools and potentially even, as they say, non-lethal weapons. And then the following Sunday is a strategy session to talk about what kind of campaigns we could have to at least regulate the use of drones. I encourage your listeners to go to our website, which is codepink.org, and under Ground the Drones, you can get all the information about the summit. Please come and attend if you can. Tell your friends about it. And if you can't, stay in touch with us through the website so that you can see what kind of campaigns come out of this. And I'm also doing a book tour and anxious to come into different communities, travel around the country. And so if you're interested in having me come to talk about drones, please send an email to Medea@codepink.org.
Can you elaborate a little bit, Medea, on this question of drones in the U.S. skies and their use as non-lethal weapons? What does that mean?
Well, so far, the FAA has been the one to control the use of drones here in the United States. Drones are falling from the sky left and right, and they have been very concerned that we don't allow drones to proliferate in the United States without taking care of this issue of safety first. However, as you mentioned, there is politics involved in it and a lot of money involved. And so the drone caucus in Congress has really put up a fight and pushed the FAA and now is demanding by legislation that they open up the airspace to drones. And so they are going to have to First, in just a couple of months, allow for smaller drones, and then by 2015, incorporate drones into the U.S. airspace. And so we are very concerned about what this is going to mean. There are police departments that have been using drones for surveillance purposes, and they talk about equipping them with non-lethal weapons. They talk about tasers and beanbag firing guns called stun batons. And these experiments could really proliferate once the new FAA regulations are put into effect. Whether you're concerned about the killing of people overseas or you're concerned about the surveillance state, these two issues are very intertwined, and we have to come together to regulate the use of drones for not only killing, but for spying and for the unfortunate eventual proliferation of drones at home.
Is it the case that we do need to regulate the use of drones? Are there positive aspects to the use of drones? Are nonviolent activists going to use drones in their struggle against tyranny? Or is the elimination of drones a possibility as well? What is the range of solutions or reforms being considered?
I don't think it's possible that drones will be eliminated because the cat is out of the bag. There's just way too many drones. It's too big business. And people want drones for all kinds of reasons. There are certainly positive uses of drones, just like most technologies can have positive and negative uses. They can be used for everything from, as we saw in the case of the Japan nuclear power plant meltdown, they sent in drones to determine the level of contamination. Drones are being used to combat forest fires. Farmers want drones to spray their crop. Journalists want drones to do everything from checking the weather to do their own surveillance. Police departments certainly want drones. Fire departments want drones. And there are already environmental groups that are using drones out in the ocean to try to find illegal whaling ships. There are human rights organizations that would like to have their hands on drones that could be sent into places like Syria to see whether the government is really living up to its commitment to implement a ceasefire. Drones could certainly be used for humanitarian purposes when there are floods or earthquakes. So, yes, as you implied, there are also groups like Occupy Wall Street that has used these very small, cheap drones and would like to use more sophisticated drones to fly over the heads of the police when they're beating people up and get this on record. Unfortunately, David, as we see in most technologies, the ones who are going to have ready access and the regulations are going to favor is going to be the Pentagon and Homeland Security, not us in the peace and justice movement. So while we might get our hands on some small drones and there might be some good purposes to it, the overall effect of having these drones will be negative.
We have maybe a minute left. Is the proper goal then perhaps to get the drones out of the secret unaccountable agencies like the CIA, get the drones brought into compliance with the Fourth Amendment so that they cannot legally be used to baselessly spy on you and me, and to get weaponized drones out of the skies, to eliminate them as a form of weaponry, or is that too not possible at this point?
Well, the first two are goals that I think are reasonable. The last one of getting these out of the skies, I think, is impossible at this point because, as I said, over 50 countries have drones, and non-state entities have drones. But I do think that we need both domestic and international regulations on how drones should be used. I mean, you and I know, David, we want to eliminate war in its entirety. But in the meantime, there are things we can do, as you said, like getting drones out of the hands of totally unaccountable agencies like the CIA, and to be supporting the efforts of groups like the ACLU, that are very concerned, and Electronic Frontier Foundation, about how drones are going to be used to spy on us here at home.
Our guest has been Medea Benjamin. Her book is Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control. I highly recommend it. The Drone Summit, the first ever such event, is happening in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, April 28th. You can learn more at CodePink.org. Medea, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks so much for having me on, David.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, engineered by Christian Brown in Reno, Nevada, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until next time.